Hello and welcome everybody to a special episode of Podcasting Them Softly. I'm Frank and I'm joined with Nick. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. What's going on?
Not much. Today is very exciting. We have a special guest on the show. His name is Shelby Sim, and he is the executive director of Santa Ynez Valley Tourism. I believe I got that right.
Pretty close. Pretty close.
Okay.
Visit San Ynez Valley.
Cool.
Yes, sir.
I met Shelby when I was out in Santa Barbara covering the film festival for our podcast, and Shelby hosted, or I should say sponsored, the lounge for press and filmmakers to mingle throughout the festival, so that was very cool. And then I also ran into Shelby at the Knight of Cups premiere, and we had a fun chat about Quentin Tarantino and Tony Scott. So, well, I'm going to turn it over to you. So, when we first met and you introduced me to yourself and I asked you what you did, you said you're a professional tourist, and I
right.
thought to myself that I wanted that job.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious. I'm very curious to hear what this is.
Cheers. Thanks, Frank. Frank, thank you very much for having me on. This is awesome. It's kind of a dream come true. Nick, I love your nightly posts. You know, premiering tonight, it's just great. The other night when The Thief came up, I related to that. The time of my life when that movie came out. Anyway, so it's great to connect with you guys. I'm very thankful to be a part of this. So Frank, running into you at the film festival was a real treat. It brought the content and the value, the depth to the film festival that I needed, for sponsoring it. As you said, Frank, we sponsored the lounge that hosted all the happy hours, all the parties, seminars and stuff for 2 weeks of the festival. And it was an incredible opportunity for us to just let people know about the Santa Ynez Valley, which is just 30 minutes north of Santa Barbara over a east mountain range, unique to all of North America, that creates an incredible wine world of different appellations and different varietals that are 5 minutes away as opposed to 100 miles away in Europe. And so it was, again, a great opportunity for us to establish ourselves within the Santa Barbara area that the world knows, and it's just worked out incredibly well. So thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, man, absolutely. It was a pleasure meeting you. Like I said, it was very cool. I had a time of my life there. It was very cool. Met a lot of people, made a lot of connections, saw a lot of movies. One thing I'm curious about, though, is we did see Knight of Cups together, and you
yeah.
ran out pretty fast after that movie, and I didn't get a chance to talk to you about it. Now, I know that I knew going into this movie, and then I knew as soon as it started that probably it was going to be polarizing, to put it nicely. So just out of curiosity, I was wondering what you thought about it.
Sure. Thank you for asking. I've described this movie quite a few times because people know about it and they're curious about it. To me, it was that snippet in your life when you're tired and you're not really there, but you're there. And you don't necessarily talk in a whole bunch, but you have to be there. So you're there and you're thinking about your own thoughts, but you're mildly aware of what's going on around you. And that movie is just all of those snippets over, like, well, I don't know, 5 years of time. So instead of seeing someone's conversations or someone's driving or someone like this, we just saw that mood throughout a 5-year period. And I don't need to only be in that mood for 5 years. There's so much other goodness going on. So it was too much of that one mood that you're in for the day, for sometimes maybe 5 seconds, maybe a half hour. It's fascinating in the fact that I was there. He took me there. I was in that mood for that long over that. How long do you think the period was, Frank?
I think 5 years is a pretty good guess, because there's probably like 7 or 8 different relationships he has throughout the span of the film. And a lot of the different characters have different haircuts, and he does, I think, at a certain extent, too.
Yeah.
I think the movie was actually filmed for quite a while, because Malick did that back-to-back with the other film that's going to come out this year.
Yeah.
I think he spent, like, 2 years filming it. But, yeah, I think you're dead on. I mean, for our Santa Barbara podcast that Nick and I did, the back end of it was us discussing Knight of Cups because Nick bought the Region 2 Blu-ray to be able to watch it before its American release. But, yeah, Nick and I both loved it, and that's interesting. I never really thought of that the film is the that time of your life where you're not feeling very well about yourself. You know, I think what's so fascinating about the film for me is I think that people take away kind of whatever they want from it. I personally saw it, and I think Nick did to a certain degree, that it was, you know, the Terrence Malick, the writer-director, was his, essentially his subconscious in a way. It was like faded memories.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense, too. Faded memories, sure.
Right, because, you know, I think it's, even though it's set present day, and I think that it is a representation of Terrence Malick after he was done making films in the 70s and was just kind of like him being fed up with Hollywood or whatever and then just leaving. That was my other takeaway from it, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, while we were there, before the film started, you and I talked a lot about Tony Scott and Tarantino.
Yeah,
which was very cool. And you had mentioned that one of Tarantino's films was filmed in the Valley.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know if it was just the one, but yeah, Death Proof. You know, with Kurt Russell and the gals in the car chase. And it was latched on to his buddies Robert Rodriguez, right? So,
It was the Grindhouse movie, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and Death Proof was filmed in the roads I drive every day, and so pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. The story on that is, you know, the hotel that's made famous in Sideways with the windmill that they walk, you know, past the car dealerships from Hitching Post, and they stay in that hotel. That was the same hotel that all the crews stayed in for Death Proof, and he rented out the sports bar for like as long as the filming went on, and he would bring in his own margarita fixings. He wouldn't use theirs or anything. He brought in everything, and I remember the owner being so proud to tell me about the stories about every night Quentin Tarantino, he would come and he would bring his own margarita mixes. He would not use ours. He would use his own, and for the whole crew, it was crazy times.
That's awesome. That sounds like a Tarantino move.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's a certain kind of margarita, no doubt.
I need to watch Death Proof again because it still is the one Tarantino movie that, like, I didn't immediately, like, flip out for or go, you know, just really fall in love with the way that I have with, like, pretty much all of his stuff. I still haven't seen Hateful Eight. It came out when my son was born and just didn't have a chance to get to the theater to see it. But actually, my buddy just added it to our iTunes account. Actually, Frank, I forgot to tell you. So
ooh.
I'll be diving into that soon. Yeah, I got to see Death Proof again for sure. Because I remember feeling that, like, there was parts of it that I really enjoyed. And then the ending came and I loved it and it was wild. But there was so much of it that I just didn't get.
Cheers. It's not a pure. It's like it goes in different ways, but I think it makes you uncomfortable lots of times. And I mean, that's like his skill. It's a heavy dialogue movie, which again, it's fun. You'd love to listen to his words and all the girls talking and doing all the stuff. And the fact that you know that Mickey Rourke was supposed to be Kurt Russell makes it that much cooler. And but Kurt again. The snake Plissken and killed, you know, pulled it off, and then the gore, you know, is there, and then the end is silly to me, but yeah, I think it's a shoot 'em up, bang 'em up, crazy Tarantino movie that's definitely worth its weight.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned that Mickey Rourke was originally supposed to play stuntman Mike. Remember seeing like the first poster for that movie. And it had Mickey Rourke and Zoe Bell's name on it. And I was just like, oh, my God, Mickey Rourke's finally going to work with Tarantino. And then,
right. It would have been so big for him, too. Yeah.
It would have. I know Tarantino's tried to use him a couple of times. And Mickey Rourke is just Mickey Rourke. And
yeah.
I don't know what his deal is. But That would have been very cool to see him in a Tarantino movie, but I mean, I will say that it's much. I mean, I do love Mickey Rourke, but I love Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm kind of with Nick on that. I remember I was so stoked for Grindhouse. I thought Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror was awesome. It was just like this one big Carpenter homage, but with a Robert Rodriguez spin on it. And then I was all amped for Death Proof. And I think the first act of that movie is some of the best stuff Tarantino's ever done. The whole thing with Kurt Russell at the beginning of the movie, just watching the girls at the bar.
Yeah.
And then,
oh, yeah, no, the whole, exactly, taking me through the whole thing. Yeah, totally, masterfully. I agree.
Right, and then that head-on collision is just gnarly, man.
Gnarly!
Oh, with, like, legs flying off and shit? Jesus. So
when that back tire is burning on the girl's head in the back seat.
Yeah.
Right, dude. Yeah, that was crazy. That was like, that was, you know, what's the massacre movie? Oh, geez. Chainsaw
Texas
Massacre.
Chainsaw
quality.
Massacre, right?
Yeah, that was kick-ass. Yeah, that was nuts.
Yeah, and then I kind of feel like the second act I'm not as engaged in, but I do love how it ends. And I love the chase at the end, and then I just
it was an up
love.
Down, it's like an up-and-down experience. I got to watch it again, though.
I
yeah.
do too. It's yeah. ripe for a rewatch for me as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, it has legs. I think it'll become one of those that they're going to show separately. Rose McGowan with a machine gun in her leg, I don't think worked.
No, you weren't a fan of Planet Terror.
No, didn't hold my attention.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was really kind of like an interesting Rodriguez movie.
Yeah.
I'm not so much into zombies, and I'm not so much into Rose McGowan, but I thought she was pretty good, and I thought that what's his name, Freddie Rodriguez, did a pretty good riff on playing like the Kurt Russell,
yeah.
John Carpenter archetype. But
Robert Rodriguez, do you remember Four Rooms?
Yeah, of course.
That, he had the best bit. That was the best bit when the parents leave and the kids light the whole place on fire.
You think that's better than Tarantino's one?
Tarantino's is Tarantino's, but Robert Rodriguez is surprising. His was shocking. His was, you know, it was like by the time Tarantino's finish came up, we knew Bruce was Bruce and that, you know, the Bellman
right.
was the Bellman.
Shit.
We knew all we were familiar yeah. with that. It wasn't like I was totally bummed out. I mean, when Bruce Willis' finger got cut off, hopefully the spoiler didn't bum everybody out. But, I mean, that was great. They went, you counted, but you knew he was going to take you there. If you wanted to go there, he was going to take you there. But to me, Robert Rodriguez was killer.
Who did the lesbian room? Was that Madonna? I know Madonna directed one, and then who's the other director?
Madonna did The Witch.
Allison Anders directed The Witch, and Alexander Rockwell directed the fourth segment.
Why did I think Madonna?
Isn't
she in it?
One of the witches.
She was in the witch one.
Yeah.
She was in the witch one. Yeah.
I agree with you. I always felt that the Robert Rodriguez one was the most fun, the most energetic, the most exciting. I definitely need to see Four Rooms again.
So do I.
Wasn't Tarantino's segment all done in one shot? One static camera, like there's one 4 or 5 minute long sequence or something.
I don't remember.
I would believe that more in Reservoir Dogs than that one, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I have to watch it again.
So, all right, since we're on the Tarantino subject, Shelby, what's your favorite Tarantino film? Like, give me your top three.
My favorite movie of all time is, as you know, is True Romance, and he wrote the script, didn't do the movie, and I just read recently, and I think I'm getting more information from you guys than learning more stuff, but that he really wanted to make it, but he had to sell it to make money and decided on Reservoir Dogs, and but anyway, True Romance, Reservoir Dogs, you know, and it's a toss-up. Pulp Fiction came at a time when I was again, I think the four rooms and stuff and everything. It's like, it's a great movie. Pulp Fiction is a great movie, but it's not my favorite.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think my favorite is Jackie Brown. I think I'd go like Jackie Brown, Pulp Fiction, and Reservoir Dogs.
I found myself reciting Pulp Fiction more than any other movie. The soundtrack, of course, for every Tarantino movie when they first came out. My daughter and I was divorced when she was 3 and a half. I moved to Oregon, Portland, Oregon, and she came out to stay with me when she was 5. And I don't know what the year, but it was when someone had given me a screening copy of Pulp Fiction. And this was after I was already in love with the, you know, True Romance and Reservoir Dogs and Natural Born Killers. And so I went and found a soundtrack before the movie came out. They released it first. And that soundtrack just became huge. And then Reservoir Dogs was actually the movie was the soundtrack that I spent 2 weeks with my daughter when we reconnected in Oregon. I had a girlfriend in Willamette. I live in Beaverton. We'd make that drive and just listen to the soundtrack for forever. Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, best soundtrack movies. Great, great music.
Yeah, I remember listening. I remember going to and getting the Pulp Fiction soundtrack before it came out, back at an old Strawberries music. It was an East Coast chain. I remember going there and getting it well before I saw the film and, like, totally getting obsessed with the music. And then when I saw that movie, it was just, like, totally life-changing. I think it's one of my favorite movies, top five for me of any filmmaker. Easily my favorite film that Tarantino's ever made. I just think it's so so rewatchable and so entertaining. And like you said, it's so quotable. And it really kickstarted like this movement in cinema and reignited a lot of creative juice, I think, in the independent film world. And, you know, I was 14 when I saw it in the theater, and it just made a humongous impact on my life and really, really just put me in a different spot. So I would say Pulp Fiction, definitely number one. Reservoir Dogs, I would say number two. And Jackie Brown, number three. But those are kind of interchangeable. I could put Jackie Brown at number two and Reservoir Dogs at number three. But, you know, I've been a fan of all of his work. I love Django Unchained. Big fan of that movie. That's actually my favorite, I think, out of all of his recent, you know, history, you know, his revisionist history stuff. And
you like again, more than Bastards?
I liked Inglourious Bastards a lot. I've seen it a bunch of times. I don't like it as much as Django Unchained. I'm a big fan of westerns, and I love seeing I love the Sam Peckinpah stylings to the shootouts in Django Unchained. I love how violent and bloody that was at the end in the house. I thought that's fucking outrageous. And not that I don't love Bastards. Bastards is awesome. It's got great edge. It's got great attitude. I just there's something about Django Unchained. I just think the Western milieu for me is really enticing. And I'm definitely anxious to see Hateful Eight. You know, especially considering, you know, the divisive response to it, a lot of people loving it, a lot of people not loving it. And I'm quite anxious to see Jennifer Jason Leigh in it.
Fucking the Hateful Eight's great, man.
Hateful Eight is another one of those things. We're comfortable with Tarantino. We know he's going to give us, but this sucker still gives you twists and turns. And it's so, the stuff you see in CinemaScope is crazy. And, And Nick, I'm right with you. Jennifer Jason Leigh, ever since Ridgemont High, all over it, always will be.
Yeah, she's a great lover. She's great. And I love how you bring up True Romance, because obviously Frank and I are big Tony Scott fans, and we've got some Tony Scott goodies in the works at Podcasting Them Soft. And True Romance really is something special, because it's like you got Tarantino's gift for dialogue, and then you had Tony Scott's gift for the visuals. And not that Tarantino doesn't have his own set of gifts, but that great mix of slick and gritty that Tony Scott was able to achieve pretty much in every
movie. And editing as well.
Cinematography, yeah. Everything. Really, really just it hit on all cylinders. And, you know, it's a movie that has gotten better with age. And
absolutely.
I think that it's a film that when it came out, it Now, correct me if I'm wrong. That came out in 95? True Romance? 93?
I'll look it up right now, but I'm pretty sure you're right.
When did was it
93?
Was it 93 or 95? I forget.
93.
Okay. So that predates Pulp Fiction. So what, it was Reservoir Dogs, then True Romance.
Then True Romance, then Pulp Fiction.
Then 94 was when you had Pulp Fiction and Natural Born Killer show up on the scene.
Right.
Jesus.
Right.
Just like, are you kidding when you think about that? I mean, like, honestly, like...
Explosion,
Think about the impact on cinema that Tarantino made in 91 to 90 to 94. It's just amazing to think about, really, when we're breaking it down like this.
Oh, it is. And let's go back to your props to True Romance again. It was the first time I ever saw a chick get beat up, and I was into it. I mean, it was the way it was done cinematically. You were rooting for Alabama, and you knew that she could handle a punch, and she was going to come back, and you know, and she took out
James
Gandolfini,
right?
Yeah, that was awesome. That was a whole shift too in guts and bringing stuff and letting us see stuff and have it be accepted and exciting, you know.
Yeah, that actually, you know, it's funny when you bring that up because I remember when I was younger watching that scene, it always made me feel uncomfortable in like this weird way because I wasn't used to seeing a woman get beat up like that on screen. And she really gets her ass kicked in that. I mean, like and then when she triumphs and just flip, I mean, like you get this overwhelming sense like that rushes through you. And, you know, I think that was the gift I always felt that Tony Scott was able to bring with pretty much all of his movies. I mean, regardless of what the subject matter or the genre was, he always gave you that Tony Scott experience where you felt something and there was something immediate and visceral and really intense. And True Romance really is, again, so it's like the action movie that Tarantino made like before he got into, you know, making his bigger stuff. So, which is kind of neat.
Well, totally. Well, it's the best of both worlds, right? Same thing he did with the submarine movie. You know,
Crimson
Tide.
I call it the submarine movie. rude, but you know, because that wasn't his move. That was another Tony Scott exciting thing. But they utilized that that Tarantino connection of dialogue that connects you to the movie that brings you part of it. So not only are you talking about, you know, what are you trying to fuck me? What are you trying to, why, you know, does my ass taste like vanilla ice cream or whatever, you know, it's like with all that exciting stuff, those great words that are a great mix together.
Yeah. That's always interesting. When I think back, I watch Crimson Tide probably once a year. I pop in the DVD and I always forget that Tarantino, you know, did an uncredited rewrite or a script doctor on it or whatever it is. But you're so right with, like, you know, it's very subtle, but you can pick up on it. You know, like the whole exchange about the Silver Surfer and stuff like that with, you know, the reference of comic books from, you know, the 70s and everything. It's very cool, the, you know, kind of hidden relationship that Tony Scott and Tarantino seem to have.
That brings us all in, that makes us all having fun too. So it's kind of like, you know, Beverly Hills Cop, remember, they were great at that. He was, you know, Eddie Murphy could connect with those FBI straight dudes and tell a joke, and we were all in that joke. That's the way to, I think, the same kind of vehicle to.
I maintain that Beverly Hills Cop, the first, I mean, I like Beverly Hills Cop 2 as well because it's Tony Scott, of course, but Beverly Hills Cop, the original, in my head, is a perfect movie. Like, there is nothing wrong with that movie. It tells an engaging story. It makes sense. It's funny. It's got good action. It's got good drama. And you like the characters. And not only that, it holds up. Like, there's never a day where Beverly Hills Cop is not a good movie. And I remember when I was in college – it was put in my head that two movies or three movies. It was put in my head that three by a screenwriting professor. Three movies were perfect in his mind. He had seen three perfect movies from a screenwriting standpoint: Witness, Beverly Hills Cop, and Baby Boom. Baby Boom. And not that Baby Boom was the greatest movie ever, but that Baby Boom had followed exactly what you were supposed to do from like a screenwriting standpoint. And it was like a model of efficiency. And like, you know, you hit your marks on exactly like page 26 and page 58 and page, you know, 94 and everything else. But I remember those were three scripts that we dissected, broke down, discussed in that class. And I swear I must have watched those three movies that one semester like four or five times a piece. But Beverly Hills Cop is just such a classic movie.
Plus, it's got Heat Is On by Glenn Frey. So, I mean, I don't know how more classic you could get with a film. I mean, come on. Heat Is On? It's one of the greatest songs to ever come from the 80s.
That's the keyboard thing, right?
Oh, no, that's a different one. But
yeah,
come on, The Heat Is On?
The Heat Is On. I can't sing it. I will not sing it.
The
Heat Is On. It's like some sisters or something are singing that.
It's like I almost started to sing it, so thank you for saving me from singing The Heat Is On our podcast.
Hey, The Witness is a good movie, too. That's a good movie.
Witness.
I actually just watched that not too long ago. That was the first movie I ever saw boobs in.
Wow. Actually. From an Amish woman, in fact.
Exactly, so it was, like, wholesome. But I was obsessed with Harrison Ford when I was a little kid because all I watched was Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
So then it's like my mom let me watch Witness. I mean, that movie's pretty tame.
Yeah.
For, like, a little kid for the most part. It gets a little intense with, like, the shootout and stuff, and Danny Glover's pretty fucking creepy in that. But
that is not,
yeah,
that is,
no.
That is not the Amish way. It's not my way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but and its soundtrack was really good too. I think I had that soundtrack on cassette when I was little. But yeah, no, I just recently rewatched that because I went through like a lot of Harrison Ford's filmography when the new Star Wars movie came out, and I was like, damn, I haven't seen The Witness.
What was your guys' opinion of Frantic?
Oh,
I just watched.
Nick just rewatched it.
Yeah, I just rewatched Frantic like a month and a half ago or something. It's so funny that you bring that up. I hadn't seen it in years, and my wife and I watched it, and it's enjoyable. It's very entertaining. I mean, it's clearly Roman Polanski, you know, doing like a Hitchcock wrong man, wrong place kind of thing. And I thought the twist at the end was pretty cool about what it is that he's actually carrying, the device, the nuclear device. There's just some odd lapses in tone throughout that movie. Like, there's this really odd dance sequence that like kind of comes out of nowhere, like in the last act when like the suspense is being ratcheted up. There are like a couple really odd moments, but Frantic is definitely an underrated thriller.
Yeah, I think Frantic is solid. I've always enjoyed that, and I saw that movie when I was, like, way too young to really see it, because that's when I was, like, hitting the Harrison Ford thing really hard when I started to get a little older when I was younger. But that's a movie that I revisited when I got older, and, I mean, I really dig it. That's, like, to me, Frantic is kind of one of those seminal Polanski films, like the hardcore, like, paranoid thriller abroad. Well, it had to be shot abroad, but anyway, like, you know, I always looked at that as part of his seminal work. I've always really enjoyed it. I actually want to rewatch that now that you guys brought that up.
Yeah, I've always liked it. A lot of music came out of that movie that we still hear today, and it was a vanity piece for Harrison. It was a vanity piece for Harrison. Oh my gosh, he looked amazing in that movie.
Yeah, very good cinematography, and I think, like you said, the score, I believe it was Morricone.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I believe. I could be wrong, but I believe it was Morricone who did the music.
What about, all right, now that we're going through, like, the deep cuts of Harrison Ford's 80s work, The Mosquito Coast?
Oh, man, are you kidding me? Oh, jeez, I have this shirt.
What, like, the... like the button down?
I have his like Hawaiian shirt like that he wears on the mosquito coast, dude. I love that movie. Oh my gosh, I love that man who I love the guy he played. I love that movie.
That movie's intense, man.
Yeah. I gotta watch that. And that's another Peter Weir. Like all Peter Weir really has done is just like make underrated or understated movies. You know, like I mean, you look at some of the films he's made, and yeah, like they've been successful. But I just feel like he's one of those guys that's just kind of like he's so quiet and classy, and just like doesn't show off too much. And big fan of his work in general. Truman Show and Master and Commander, my God, both of those movies to me are like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's just kind of, like, retired.
Yeah, I don't even know what he's done of late. Like, what was the last movie he did, The Way Back, which was super intense? That was 6 years ago. Yeah.
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, the last movie he
did... Yeah, The Way Back.
Which I
The Way Back, really Master and Commander, there was a seven-year gap there. Truman Show. I don't know what he's doing.
And it's like the Truman Show made a ton of money and was like a huge hit critically, and it took him 5 years to do the Master and Commander. So there's always Fearless. My God, I forgot about Fearless. Fearless, that movie fucked me up when I was 13. The Jeff Bridges movie.
Yeah.
That movie put the fear of flying in me forever. I mean, that is just
the strawberries. The strawberries. That's right.
Plane crash and thinking that he's God.
Oh my gosh, that Nick, that's crazy. That I still think about that plane crash. They put it to classical music, and
plane crash sequence is very, very scary and weird and
yes,
surreal in a way. It's very surreal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Peter Weir, like, just look at the credits. Like, they're, like, nearly...
Dead Poets Society? Jesus, I totally forgot that
Dead Poets
did that.
Society. I mean, like, what's the...
The guy, you know what he is, man? He's, like, an anonymous director.
Yes.
In a way.
And, like, what...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what's the weakest movie he's made? Green Card?
Green Card's awesome.
And I don't have a huge problem with that movie. You know what I mean? Like...
Green Card's so, like, schmaltzy awesome, man. That's a good romantic comedy. When, like, romantic comedies were good in, like, the late 80s, 90s. Before
like,
they got
like, Seems Like Old Times?
Seems Like Old Times?
Yeah, Chevy Chase, Goldie Hawn, up on the Monterey
Coast.
Yeah,
man, no.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the other one with the albino? Or is that the one with the albino? Which one? No, man. Oh, Foul Play is the one with, like,
Foul
the albino.
Foul Play, that was their original hit, yeah.
Right. God.
That
Chevy
was supposed
Speaking
to be...
Speaking of Chevy Chase.
Yeah. Speaking of Chevy Chase, oh, yeah.
Speaking of Chevy Chase, you had... What was... You had a movie experience that you were an extra in a Chevy Chase film, correct?
That is correct, yeah. A buddy of, like, back in the day, a million years ago, you know, the paper would say, hey, they'd like some... people to come and try out for a movie, and so we went down and got our pictures taken, me and a buddy, just probably, I was 18, I was in high school, and I got picked for the role, and it turned out to be Deal of the Century with Chevy Chase and Gregory Hines and Sigourney Weaver, and it was the comeback of some TV FBI detective guy, and Frank, if you're by your computer, you'll know the guy, but anyway, it was his comeback role, and it was filmed at the Santa Barbara Airport, or at least the parts I was in. Before I used to be able to tell girls, you can rent me at any video store, but I don't think, you know, I don't think they have them anymore. So I think you can just pull me up on YouTube any night. But I got to be with you. I'm in six different scenes, but it, you know, it's like stop the screen and look up in the upper left and that kind of thing. Anyway, it was a great experience. Chevy Chase was awesome. I think the year was 1980 or 1979. Sigourney Weaver was very uppity. She was on the way up. She was not friendly. But Chevy was really cool. We had a few scenes where we started out in the same spot. He was nice. Let's see. Those are really my only experiences. I made a lot of money. I got like $1,000 or something for a few days of work. It was cool.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I mean, and Gregory Hines was, of course, just a doll. He was, like, just but over the top, a doll, just really nice and really sweet as well. But yeah.
God, it's so funny because I was telling you earlier when you told us this that I was just talking about Deal of the Century with somebody earlier today on Facebook because he ranked all his Friedkin films and Deal of the Century was the last ranked Friedkin film, and it was like, oh my God, I can just see like the cover of the VHS at the video store with like the three of them, like, you know, what is it? It's like Gregory Hines and Chevy Chase with the thumbs up and Sigourney Weaver with the thumbs down. I remember watching that movie when I was a little kid and just like, oh my God, I need to see it again. I need to get it now. Now that you're an extra in it, I got to see Young Shelby.
Yeah.
And
that's
a great shot of me.
It's a great shot of me eating a hot dog during the arm show.
That's awesome.
That's a freaking film I've seen the least, and I've been watching freaking stuff of late. I watched Jade a few nights ago. My God, what a sleazy movie! It's amazing.
Oh, Jade is.
It's so amazing.
It is so sleazy.
It's such an obnoxious Basic Instinct ripoff. Like, it's so over the top. Everything in that movie is over the top. I find it very watchable, very entertaining, very ridiculous. I need to see Deal of the Century again. I don't have any recollection of it. And I need to see Cruising again. Because
Cruising's so fucking good.
I saw that a long time ago. I barely have a recollection of that one. And there's one other one from earlier in the 80s that he did that people aren't as fond of that I need to... Oh, that one, The Guardian. The one that, like, he even said...
Oh, the weird, like, horror movie,
that,
right?
Yeah, I've never seen that. If I have, it was in very bits and pieces. I have no memory of it. And I think even he's bad-mouthed it in the press. Like, he said he wasn't given what he needed to make it, and he wasn't happy with it, but whatever. I think William Friedkin's one of, like, the best directors. And you get a lifetime pass for The Exorcist and Sorcerer and The French Connection regardless, so...
Fucking Killer Joe.
Killer Joe. Jesus. Ridiculous. I mean, like, just so amazing.
And then To Live and Die in L.A. God, I've
Live and Die in L.A. You guys just talked about that. I like that one, too.
Yeah. To Live and Die in L.A. is awesome. So,
God, I love William Peterson.
That was, who was that guy? Who was the, one of the bad guys in Live or Die in L.A.?
Willem Dafoe?
Yeah, Willem Dafoe. So, And then Gregory Hines was in my movie, and then right after that, they made that one Asian movie where they were a buddy movie, and they were like in the Vietnam.
Off Limits.
That's
Off
a good
Limits.
Movie.
Dude, Off Limits is awesome.
I like that movie.
Oh, with like Scott Glenn and Fred Ward, where they're trying to find the major that's killing all the hookers in Vietnam, and Willem Dafoe and Gregory Hines are the two MPs trying to find. It's like essentially it's like a remake of Night of the Generals, like the World War II movie with Peter O'Toole, but set in Vietnam. It's fucking awesome.
I haven't seen it. It sounds amazing. It got one.
Oh, it's so dude. It's so sleazy.
1.5 stars from Roger Ebert. What is
well,
this?
It's funny. It's like William Dafoe and Gregory Hines buddy movie, right? That's crazy. So it's funny in itself.
Right. And then they're MPs in Vietnam, like during the war. It's like nuts. And Scott Glenn's super fucking creepy, and Fred Ward's the boss. It's awesome.
Bad
dude.
Guys. Yeah.
Yeah, Nick, you'd love it.
Yeah.
I think it's a Scream Factory or a Shout Factory 2-pack on DVD. I think I bought it.
Ebert seemed morally offended by it.
I mean, it gets pretty, perverse. I was going to say racy, but that's too sugar-coated of a word. It gets pretty perverse with, like, the killing of the Vietnamese hookers and shit. Dude, it's awesome, though.
He says, I have suggested that Off Limits is a well-made movie, well-directed, well-acted. That is true. I have no problem with the craft of the film. I simply wonder why anyone would want to have made it. It is so unredeemed in its depressing gloom, so hopeless in its view of human nature, so determined to assault us with one unhappy revelation after another, that at the end I was simply sad. He was the best fucking critic. I mean, I love Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert to me is like an endless inspiration. I could read his reviews like all day long. I think that he just always shot from the gut. I didn't always agree with him, but interesting.
So,
I have to see this now.
So he says that about that, but then he makes Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah, but he would probably say that he would probably have some great response for that. But yeah, no, that's funny.
Yeah,
I gotta check this one out. What did I just watch? Speaking of 1988, like action movies, Shakedown.
Oh God, I need that.
Right, I saw your post on that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Frank's gonna flip out when he sees Shakedown.
If there's ever a fucking movie for me, it's a shitty B movie from like what, the late 90s with Peter Weller and Sam Elliott.
And then the other one I mentioned to you, Frank, earlier today, which I was mildly surprised that you said that you hadn't seen, is McBain.
McBain. Yeah.
McBain, I didn't realize I've seen McBain, not in forever. It's the same director as Shakedown.
That's just such a terrible title.
Yeah, but as I recall, McBain is pretty awesome in like it's like B moviness. Like as I recall, so I got to track that one down.
Yeah, I'm looking that one up on IMDb right now. God, early '90s, Christopher Walken was the best. God, what, King of New York, fucking True Romance. He had so much good shit that came out then. Unless King of New York was late 80s, I think.
Yeah, still. I think that was after, right, he'd been on for a bit. But, yeah, that scene between him and Dennis Hopper, I mean, just crazy.
Oh.
It's one of the best scenes in cinema.
Yeah, the scene between him and Dennis Hopper is just phenomenal.
And when,
it's like,
you know, when Hopper eventually accepts one of the Chesterfields and he calls it that, you know, and then you hear him lighting the cigarette and then, you know, just – everything else, and then the whole eggplant thing, it's just nuts good.
It's one of the greatest, just one of the greatest scenes ever.
Absolutely.
Just any movie, any genre, just everything about it, like the way it was edited, acted, the whole thing, like the little kids and the voice.
It's, you match Dennis Hopper up against Christopher Walken in a script by Tarantino, directed by Tony Scott. It's like,
yeah.
And nobody knew, like, True Romance came out, it bombed, nobody liked it, no one liked it, like, Ebert gave it 3 stars, I think, and he was one of the nicer ones, people were off-put by the violence and the jokiness of some of it, and they didn't know what to do with it. It's, if that movie came out a year after Pulp Fiction instead of a year before... Please, like,
yeah,
the response is so different, so different.
Yeah. So many scenes like that in the movie as well. It's just, just amazing. Yeah.
Well, awesome, man. Well, thank you very, very, very much for coming on our podcast. This was awesome. I've been looking forward to this ever since I met you in the lounge you guys hosted. That was amazing.
Thank you, Frank, and it's been a blast today, as I knew it would be, and I look forward to the relationship, and let's keep talking, and we've got a podcast number 2, 3, and 4. We got a lot of movies to talk about, even ones that were filmed in the Valley, and we would love for everyone to come and visit those spots and see where those movies took place.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I'll put a link to your site when I post this. But yeah, you got to come back and to just talk movies with us, because this was just awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for letting me go. That was great.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, man. Seriously, like anytime you want to come back, let me know.
Let us know,
and we'll have you back on.
Yeah, some of our most favorite chats have been where we just riff about films and just have these really good movie buff chats. It's always a pleasure. So thank you very much for coming and chatting with us, and we'll definitely have to do it again.
I hope so. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much. Talk soon.